Session number 9875, Reel 11.
Mr. Ashurst, Reel 11. After you'd been past A1 again, you asked to be put on a draft to the Dardanelles. Could you explain why you picked the Dardanelles?
Well, I suppose I was absolutely fed up with trench warfare, and I thought the Dardanelles might be a little bit something different. You know, more open warfare, something like that. Anyway, I knew it would be warmer than France, you see, and it would be a change.
Had you heard anything about Gallipoli?
No, not really. I'd only heard about it, that's all. And I thought I've never been anywhere up there in my life. It'll be run round up there to see something I've never seen before, you see.
What arrangements were made then for the embarkation? How was it organised?
Well, the officer said, all right then, yes, I'll put you on a draft for the Dardanelles. Of course, he put me on a draft, so I didn't know where I was going properly then or anything.
Did you know which battalion you were going to?
I knew I'd go to the Lancashire Fusiliers. Oh, yes. And he put me on a draft. And the next thing, I was sailing down, I was on the train down to, was it Southampton this time?
Did you have any... Were you given any special instructions or inoculations or before you went?
Oh, yes, yes, yes. I had to be inoculated. Was it twice, I think, two inoculations. And they weren't very nice. Still, I was all right. I got through them.
Did they affect you?
Yes, a little bit. They affect you a little bit, yes. Put you off for a while, you know.
Did you get tropical kit issued or...?
No, I didn't get no tropical clothes or anything like that. I went in the old khaki uniform. And the same thing as I went to France in, you might say. No special kit or anything. Anyway...
I believe before you actually left... You were confined to barracks, so to speak, and could you tell me about that?
Of course you are confined to barracks for the time being, you know, before you go anywhere like that. I mean, they may give you a night off, but you've got to be back. That's definite. And if you're not, you're a deserter straight away. Anyway, I had no inclination to desert, I suppose. One or two did. But I didn't. I returned back and I fell in with the draft for the train and down to, I think it was Southampton we left this time. And there was a two-funnel steamer we got on unnoticed called HMT Northland. That was the name of the ship. His Majesty's Transport Northland.
Where were you put on the Northland? What sort
We had... I was right below... But we had wire beds, you know, wire netting beds fixed. So that when I went to sleep, I was in a wire netting bed and my nose wasn't far off the deck, you know, when I laid down off the deck above. And, of course, when you get on the boat, everybody is always instructed which lifeboat they've got to make for, you see. You're always told which is your lifeboat. You have your life belt, which you carry with you every minute. You sleep with it. before you settle down for the day. And of course I expected a naval boat or two to go with us, but I never noticed any. And they certainly didn't go with us all the way across. They followed us for a little while. They never followed us so far. I know, we sailed into Gibraltar. I thought we'd come in the wrong way, if you know what I mean. Having seen Gibraltar on the map, and now it comes down the rock. We didn't seem to come behind that and go in. We seemed to face it, as if we'd come from South Africa. You see, it was there in front of us. And some of the fellows were saying that, oh, we'd come a roundabout way to dodge submarines.
Were you very aware of the submarine risk?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes, one or two of our fellows had gone down, you know, a fortnight before, I think it was. HMS Southland, that I mentioned later on in the story where we went at Mudras, went before us and was torpedoed. But she got to Mudros.
You knew about that then?
Yes, I knew about that.
What were conditions like on board? You've told us about the bedding. Was it very crowded?
Well, no, I wouldn't say it was crowded. No, it wasn't crowded. And, of course, when we were all knocking about, the boat was pretty full. I mean, we had what's names in the morning, you know, first thing, gymnasiums, you know, physical jerks, and we had that to put up with, and musketry lessons.
So there was some training done.
Yes, all sorts of things like that.
What was the food like?
Well, I didn't complain much. The food was all right. I never remember complaining about the food on that boat. There was plenty, and it was all right. I mean, I'd already been used to rations, you know, in France, so I knew the difference, you see. And there was no such a thing as like rationing in France. We had good food, and probably not the very best of food, but anyway, we had good food, and we had enough, and we sailed away.
Did you have any problem with seasickness?
No, I might have had just a faint feeling around that Bay of Biscay, whatever they call it. So we had a bit rough going through there, but I never remember being sick, no. Used to do all sorts of things, you know, breathe in and breathe out, and tricks they used to tell you to do so you wouldn't be sick.
Where did you go? Did you get ashore at Gibraltar?
No. We got to Gibraltar and we stopped dead. And a little posh boat come along after us, you know, posh officer, all gold braid, cap and arms. And he come with this little steamer. They took the ladder down, you know, and up he came. Had a word or two with the captain, just a short while, 5 minutes, perhaps no more. Then away he went again, buzzing off. And we started to move then into the Mediterranean. And we noticed, most of us, as we were going, we could see the African coast, you know, the Moroccan and Algerian coast. We kept rather in view of them, and somebody said we'd had orders to steam alongside the coast, you know, as near to the coast, steam alongside the coast, in sight of the coast. Some of the lads said, of course, you never knew whether these things were right, but they look right, you know. So we sailed along the African, Moroccan and African coast. We could see the desert, you know, the white buildings. We go a bit further, and I think it was, what was that big ship coming back as an hospital ship? Loaded, of course, up with the wounded. Was it Olympic? That big boat, a big boat at the time. She was used as a hospital ship. We met her, we passed her in the Mediterranean.
Did you communicate with them at all?
She shouted across, all the lads shouted across. We shouted back, you know, they were shouting, good luck to you, who are you, what mob? You know, and we shouted back to them. And off we went. Of course, you couldn't miss one of them on the sea, you know. And especially if it was night time. Absolutely one blaze of colour, those hospital ships, you know.
There was no possibility of mistaking it.
Oh, no, none whatever, no. No, they were lit up like discos, I should think. The green and red lights, you know. Oh, a cross bigger than this, I should think. If not as big anyway as this. Red cross on each side. Lit up, of course, in red.
And then you went to Malta,
we passed on, and the next thing we see, we turn in and we lose sight of Morocco and Algeria. We turn inwards. We found out we've lost Morocco and what's the name? We couldn't see them. So with an idea, we were turning in for Malta. And eventually, Malta appeared in front of us, you know. And we went in harbour at Malta. There's a French warship in there playing God Save the King or something like that, you know. Or it's a long way to Tipperary and so forth. We sailed in there and settled down. Well, I don't know, they say it's the deepest harbour in the world. I don't know whether it is or not. That's what they say, eh? Malta. Anyway, we settled down and everything was okay, and they never told us how long we were going to stay or if we could go ashore or anything. But we were quite interested in the usual things that happen round these boats when they sail into Malta, you know, like the tourist boats or anybody. There's all these little boats come sailing up. Little boys, about 7 or 8, in a bit of a tub, shouting for pennies, you know, see a dive. Chuck pennies in and down there like a little duck, in and out, and, you know, just like little ducks. And there was a big fella there, I always remember him, and he's standing up in his kind of a boat, not much of a boat, but he's got one, and he's standing up in the middle of it shouting, see a dive, other side, 1 shilling, other side, 1 shilling. So I say, what you talking about? You'll dive to the other side of the boat if you give him a bob. Right, let's give him, you know. Yeah, chum. Well, of course, he soon gets the shilling. And he dived under. We all strolled across the other side watching him come up, you know. I didn't think he was ever coming up anymore, so it did a lot more, but he did do. Oh, yes, he came up. And he went back again. You know, see a dive again from the other side, back to his little boat. Till the police came. And when the harbour police come, they clean them all off, you know. But they don't clean them all off, because they're all off before the police come. They see them coming, and they sail away, the little lads, and that. And the police come up, and as soon as they've gone back again, they're there again, just the same. doesn't make any difference. Anyway, we were only there, was it 24 hours or so? I think we'd only one night there, was it? Might have been two. Nothing happened to us, I mean, with no coal or anything like that. We just was there, and then we got orders to move. So we struck off again, this time across the Aegean Sea, you know, that way, for right away to
Mudros.
Eh?
You heading towards Mudros?
Yes. That was our next stop. But we were warned that this may be a bit wild, this, you know. With no sleeping down below, we all had to sleep on deck, passing through the Aegean. Every man must sleep on deck. No smoking, no talking, no shouting. And every man sleep on deck with his life belt for his pillow. So we had to do that. Anyway, the weather was okay, you know, for that. We slept on deck. And there's the lookout, of course, and on the boat, at the top, in the crow's nest. He shouted down when he saw anything, you know. He was the first to see things, and being high up. And but one day, the boat took a sharp twist. It seen a glimmer in the sea, you know. And it took a sharp twist and started banging. And nothing happened. But it sounded the alarm, you know. The alarm sounded.
What was the alarm?
See, was it one long... I forget now. I think it was one long hooter, you know. And everybody dashed to his boat, or raft, whatever he'd been dictated to. Everybody dashed to that. And when all come to all, this thing that had done us, it was a biscuit tin, army biscuit tin, and it floating down the sea, and it had glittered in the sun, you know. Anyway, we went towards it with the ship, and the officers spent a little time sinking it with rifles, you know. Anyway, that was out, and we carry on, and then all of a sudden we get from the chap in the crow's nest. We can all hear him, of course, you know. Red light ahead, sir. Ooh. Here, what's this? Then the officer, soon a minute or so after that, the officer would shout, aye, aye. He'd got it then, he'd come high enough, you see, to see it. Over the skyline sort of thing, and he was able to see it, so, aye, aye. And as we get nearer this red light, we're all wondering what it is, because nobody says what it is. And anyway, it turns up a bit to one side, you know, goes up one side and lets us come up. And as we came up, it's a bloody great cruiser, you know, with guns bristling at us like that, frightened us all to death, a few hundred yards across the sea, you know. She had her gun set right on us, and she was stopped, and we were stopping, and the captain over there, somebody shouts, who are you? And a fellow answered back, like, HM Transport Northland, sir. What have you got aboard? Ammunition, soldiers, sir. right after a while. All right, he says. Follow me through the night. And he went off, got in front of us about a mile with his red light and sailed off. And we followed on. We knew we were all right then, you know. Until we got to Mugis, we were quite all right with that fella in front of us. Before we got to Mugis, he stopped, you know, the cruiser, turned round and come gently past us about a couple hundred yards across the water, shouting, well, the best of luck, Lancashire Fusiliers, you know. Bye-bye.
You were all a draft for the Lancashire Fusiliers then, were you? I should have asked that earlier. Were you all Lancashire Fusiliers on board?
Yes, yes, we were all the same.
About how many?
I'm taking it. We all went to the Lancashire Fusiliers anyway.
About how many would there be, roughly?
Well, 200. Couple of hundred, I should think.
What were your first impressions of Mudros when that morning then?
Well, we first of all, when we get to Mudros, we have to stop because no ship can go in that harbour unless it's brought in by an harbour master. So you stop dead, and another fella comes full of gold braid again in a little thing. Has a word with the captain and tells the captain to follow him. So the little boat went in and we had to go behind it. There was only these certain places where you could enter the harbour, you see. All the others were big nets. You could see the floats for the nets. But you didn't know which was the space between you could go in. Anyway, he led us in. Oh, it was absolutely full of boats, Mudros. Battleships, submarines, transport ships. Oh, there's every kind of ship in that harbour. It was absolutely full. Big naval ship. A big naval ship there with very high, you know, like television things, very high mass. It's to say like that used to talk to England, you know, with wireless. It was the naval headquarters, that big white cruiser or whatever it was. It was naval headquarters. And we settled down there when we got alongside. We didn't go off the ship, you know, for a while. And then we got orders to move off the ship. So little boats come alongside and we got on them, the little boats. And away it chugged and it dropped us in what they call Wigan Pier. Lads call it Wigan Pier. A rough stone pier, you know. They called it Wigan Pier. And we stepped on off these little boats onto that and onto the beach. But we didn't do that. We didn't do that, you see. We stepped off these little boats onto little ships they were, and we find out we're at Suvla Bay. We're not at Cape Palace where the big landing was. We've landed at Suvla Bay, gone further up the left-hand side to the landing at Suvla. And we land there.
So you didn't land at Mudros at all?
Wait a minute. Oh, yes. Yes, we did.
So you'd have a period at Mudros?
Oh, yes.
So you did. Wigan Pier would be at Suvla, would it? Or was it at Mudros?
No, it wasn't at Suvla. No. And it wasn't at it was at Mudros, Wigan Pier.
Did you?
No, it was at Dardanelles.
Right. So what happened when you landed, skipping that bit for the moment, what happened when you landed at Mudros? You were on board a couple of extra days, you said. Then you went
We went up in the hills. We landed, yes. And we went up in the hills. And there was miles and miles of camps up there on those hills. Australians and, you know, Indians. Miles of camps there were. And we settled down under canvas. And it weren't bad at all.
What did you think of that? Your first contact with Australians, I suppose?
Oh, yes. Yes, it was.
New Zealanders. What did you think of them?
Well, they were good soldiers. We knew that, you know, fighting. But they hadn't the same discipline as we had. They had a lot more of their own way and six times as much pay, much money. So we couldn't really love them, could we?
Did you resent them then, having more money?
In a sense, yes. But we didn't really resent them. We just blamed ourselves. And they used to say to us, why don't you go and strike with them more money? The Aussies used to say to us. So, anyway, we settled down under this canvas. And we had the usual routine then. Day after day for a while, you know.
Were you training?
Oh, yes, a little bit of training.
But you hadn't...
Marching and...
You hadn't
little
been
jerks.
You hadn't been assigned to your battalion yet, then? You were still just a draft,
right? Yes,
you?
We were a draft. And there was big canteens there, you know, where you could get a pint of beer every day. Queue up, you had to queue up for it. And you could get a pint of beer. But it was awful stuff. Nevertheless, the lad said there's no bad beer, you know. And four of us were sat out of our tent with a ground sheet down on our bread and posse on it, you know. We were going to have our tea. And two Australian soldiers came up, you know, and one fella struggling with a blanket full of stuff. And, hello, Tommy. You're having tea? Posh your bloody tea, or something, he said. Here, he says. Have a tea with me. And he skimmed the blanket over and emptied it. Well, it was full of all sorts. Talk about things he tipped out of that. Tins of salmon, little tins of salmon, little tins of sardines, jam, cigarettes, all sorts in that blanket. Pounds it must have cost. Now he says, have a good tuck in with me and my pal. So of course we did do. They waltzed back again to fill the camp, fill the blanket again. And but that was the sort of Australian you met, you know.
Did you meet any of the local inhabitants of the island?
Very few. Hardly any local people. There was one little village near us. Well, 5 minutes walk away. And I don't think there was 20 people in it, this village. And they had to get water from a well, you know. And one Greek girl used to come for water, and she was reckoned to be a beauty. She was a beauty, you know. Long dress. And she carried this pail of water. Well, our Tommies, they used to specially go down just to see her. Have a walk down to well to see her come for water. But she wouldn't take him on, you know. Oh, no. She took nobody on. One look from those green eyes and you'd had enough. Anyway, we called her the Lady of the Well. And at night time, we were sort of on the side of the hill, you see. At night time, we looked down into the valley. You never saw a sight like it in your life. Hundreds of candles burning, hundreds. and men gambling. Talk about Monte Carlo. There was hundreds, I'm sure. Gambling, do you know?
Which games were they playing?
They were playing Crown and Anchor, mostly. Crown and Anchor, some were playing a card game, you know. We're having it, five or six of them be having a card game. Then there was the Crown and Anchor boards. The Aussie there with his cap, his hat, you know, like his Canadian hat, you know. There, full of money. And he was taking money on this Crown and Anchor, any more on the good old Mudhook, you know, and so forth. And you'd see fellas get up, having lost the whole lot they'd drawn as wages. And you'd see another fellow get up another time, delighted. He had a good win, you know. But you never saw anything like it. There were summer nights and the candle was there, not even the wind blowing the candle.
Did you gamble?
Yes, I've had many a do at it. Yes, I had a do at it, yes.
Did you win or lose? How'd you do?
Well, I didn't do much winning, no. I packed in. But I hadn't much luck on it. But some fellas did, you know.